Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian. This is Insight number 135, recording on Thursday, the 9th of September, a few days before Nokia World 2010. You'll be hearing this probably a couple of days before the event. With me, as always, in Sussex, I have...
Rafe Blanford.
And in Edinburgh, I have...
Ewan Spence.
And in Hull, I have...
David Gilson.
Are you impressed, Ewan, that I didn't leave you to last?
Well, no, we're doing it by seniority. Yeah, I am impressed you aren't leading me to the last. Yes.
Right, on with this show. We have, obviously, Nokia World 2010 is the big event looming up for Symbian enthusiasts. There's speakers' corners, there's keynotes, there's probably new devices, and there's hands-on demos. How should we do this, Rafe? Do you want to just start with briefly saying what you're most looking forward to?
Yeah, well, I think it's probably worth saying, first of all, that for those that don't know, Nokia World is kind of one of the two big events of the year for Nokia in terms of trade shows. They also are generally at Mobile World Congress. This year actually was pretty quiet at Mobile World Congress. It was a strategic announcement of the tie-up with Intel for MeeGo. So this year I think it's going to be particularly big. And we have seen some device announcements since then, particularly notably things like the E5 and the N8. But I'm certainly expecting to see some device announcements, but we'll also be hearing about the latest details of Ovi services. So, for example, last year, Nokia launched a number of new Ovi services, sort of sharing location and things like that. And they do tend to, where possible, make those available immediately afterwards in the beta lab. So I think everybody will have something to play with come Tuesday next week. There will be longer term strategic announcements. I'm pretty sure we'll be hearing some updates on things like the Ovi Store and Nokia Maps. Sorry, Ovi Maps, I should say. And at the same time, going on with Nokia World is the Nokia Developer Summit. And this is Nokia's annual developer conference that's sort of been rolled into Nokia World this year. It was going to happen early in the summer, but I suspect they put it back slightly so they can talk a little more detail about Symbian 3, MeeGo, and of course the overlying Qt layer. And as I said, we'll get some developer announcements. I imagine that will be in the realms of tools, but also the latest developments for developing through Ovi Publish and things like that. What I'm expecting, we've sort of gone through it there, but it's a very busy few days, and we're going to be talking to some of Nokia's key executives as well as product managers, and we'll be running around the show floor collecting as much information as possible. We'll certainly have a live a podcast recorded live from the show and get that up sometime in the middle of next week, but there'll be lots of content going on the site, and I'm very much looking forward to it. This is, I think, my seventh, maybe sixth or seventh Nokia World, but it's going to be one of the first ones where we've done it with quite a few of the team along too, so I'm looking forward to sharing the experience with all of you.
Yes, this is also my first Nokia World, amazingly. I've been to all the Symbian shows, but never a Nokia World. And of course, this is also David's first event, actually, for covering it for All About Symbian. So I'm sure you're going to have an exciting time, David. Is there a particular thing you're looking forward to?
I'm particularly looking forward to a lot of the speakers that are coming. We've got Kevin Fowle from Twitter. And of course, on the second day, we've got Tim Berners-Lee. And I'm also looking forward to seeing Jim McGonigal talking about the future of gaming and some of the roundtables about social media and messaging. Very interested to see what's said there.
Yeah, so several of the events I noticed that you'd signed up for in terms of attending. This was the Speaker's Corner events. I'm also attending, so we can sit together and compare notes, I suspect. But I think we have some fairly similar interests there. Ewan, what was your what things are you looking forward to?
I'm mostly looking forward to that moment where, as a team, we all kind of look at each other and go, did they just announce what I thought they announced, and then scrabble to work out the implications? I remember the announcement of Comes With Music and Unlimited, which was just hidden away in the middle of one of Ansi's speeches about two or three years ago. And Rafe, I think I was there with you with that Nokia World, and we just kind of like, and worked out the implications. And for the next two, 3 hours, it's like, are they really going to be able to pull that off? Nokia don't do a one more thing. Nokia do a, we're going to put something absolutely stupendous right in the middle of the keynote, as if it's just a, oh yeah, and we're doing that as well, and we're doing that as well. So that lovely mix of Finnish underplayingness of a huge announcement. And yeah, you literally have to play spot the announcement. What was the big news? We actually have to do some intellectual work. It's not served up to us on PowerPoint. And that's what I'm looking forward to.
Now, Rafe, Ewan, and David are going to be there for most of the conference. I'm just there on the Tuesday, but one thing that is particularly interesting, I know that Ewan was asking about this earlier, is how we're actually going to cover it in terms of smartphone hardware. Now, obviously, there will be a few laptops around, but you may be interested in some of the mobile hardware and accessories and software we're taking about with us. I'm probably heading out with the Nokia N86 and the Samsung i9-10 for video work. I'm just wondering whether I dare leave the E90 in the drawer and not take it with me. It's been to every conference with me for the last 4 years, I believe. The old faithful retired at last, but we shall see. There's the Nokia E75, which I probably also keep as a backup because of the nice QWERTY keyboard. In terms of software, I think Gravity will just do everything for me in terms of photo blogging and social interaction. There's also going to be a live photo feed straight to the All About Symbian front page, which will probably happen via Flickr. I'm sure Rafe will have all the details of that integrated nicely. So we're going to be doing lots of photo blogging, lots of keynote analysis and reporting, and obviously hands-on with the various devices. David, can I come to you first? What devices are you taking with you for handling all the sort of new devices and the coverage?
Well, I had three candidates, and I think just one of them is going to stay on the bench. My main workhorse is going to be the 72. I've got Pixel Pipe set up, Gravity. That's pretty much all I need. For photos, I'm leaning towards taking the N82 because it's just such a good camera, and I've got the good flash, the Xenon flash for the evening dos. There was the N900, very, very tempting to take, very powerful, fantastic web browser, but the battery life just isn't there. So it's Symbian only devices for me, and plenty of spare batteries.
Yeah. Ewan, what's your preferred choice of mobile hardware?
Well, I'm taking two. The Nokia X6, it's my day-to-day phone. It's already set up with all the software that I like and I use, so there's no point in changing it. But as with all these things, it is nice to have a backup sitting on the bench when Derek Jeter starts banning a 200. So I'm probably also going to have a Nokia 5800 lurking as well. Fully charged, almost indestructible, pretty much the same software load. But, you know, it'll switch on when I need it to switch on. It will do what I need it to do, and then it will go away again. It'll sit with a 3G SIM card in there, so it will get data. But the main thing that I'm taking with me, as always, is a piece of paper and a pencil, because much as everybody talks about the cloud and getting online and uploading stuff, there won't be any bandwidth in Nokia world. You won't be able to get online with the laptops and everything. You'll struggle to get even a Bluetooth connection through to anything. So quite frankly, sitting down, writing out notes longhand, and then typing them up afterwards, that's one of the key things as well. It's one of the things that mobile phones and PDAs and all of that still have problems accommodating, which is providing a reliable source of recording information when you're offline, that you don't have to know you need near battery power, that you don't have to worry about where your charge is for the next thing or how you're going to deal with it. You just get it down, grab the information, and work out later what you're going to do for the story. So keep something indestructible to be connected, but otherwise make sure you have a fallback that you will always know works.
And is this the special space age pen that they use up in the space shuttle to write upside down?
No, it's the old trusty Pentel P205, the only automatic pencil that Ewan recommends and has done for the last 25 years.
There you go, an automatic pencil review as well on the All About Symbian Insight. And in terms of reliability and batteries, I know I'm taking the probably a Proporter mobile charger with me just in case, but Rafe's got a cunning plan. He's basically going to take a whole stack of BP4L batteries and then just choose the devices that fit it. Isn't that right, Rafe?
Well, something like that. I'm actually going to probably be using my E72, like David, as my main workhorse, because it can do everything I need it to do, and it's pretty quick. And yes, rather than worry too much about extra battery charges, I'm just going to throw in a couple of extra BP4Ls so that if it does run out of power, which I wouldn't really expect it to over the course of a day, but maybe if I end up pushing it really hard, I've got something I can instantly switch to. However, the E72 doesn't quite do it for me on the camera department, so I'll probably be bringing along another device. Now, whether that's the N86 or the N97 Mini, I haven't quite decided yet. In terms of sort of extra bits and pieces, I'll definitely be bringing a laptop. There's no way I can create all the necessary content on the phone and do sort of editorial and make sure the site's all working as it should do, because inevitably there can be a crisis. So I'll be bringing along the Nokia booklet, which I'll be using to sort of live coverage from the keynotes in conjunction, of course, with the rest of the team. I'll also be bringing along a sort of HD camera. Unfortunately, it can't be the M8 because we don't actually have our hands on one yet. But we want to capture some video at the show, including some of the interviews and hopefully a Nokia World walkabout. I'm pleased to say that Ben Smith from the Really Mobile Project and Ewan McLeod from Mobile Industry Review are also going to be around, and we've agreed that we'll team up and try and get some extra video. So hopefully we'll be able to get some really good video from you out of the show in HD quality, which we'll get up as soon as we can. And the other thing I always take with me is a portable microphone. I do try and do it on the phone sometimes, but the loud environments make it a bit difficult, and that's really useful for making notes or indeed recording interviews or something like that, because by the time you've had 6 interviews in a day or various meetings, it's quite difficult to remember what the first person said, even if you do have extensive paper notes, as Ewan suggests. So yeah, be bringing along a fair bit of equipment. I've always found the connectivity at Nokia World fails during the keynote and works the rest of the time. That probably says something about the number of people trying to cover it when you're sitting in the front row.
Or how boring the keynote is.
Well, yes, that's perhaps an alternative explanation. But I think this time around we're going to be treated to some quite interesting things. And just on a personal note, I'm really looking forward to hearing Tim Berners-Lee give the keynote. Nokia always gets him some great external speakers. And as things settle down after day one, you know, day two can often be a period where you can get some great speakers and wander out into the show floor, find out about all the latest products. So I think it's going to be incredibly busy. Just as a kind of concluding thought on Nokia World, this is really going to be the big, you know, party for Symbian 3 and the launch of the N8. I think it's pretty likely at this point that we will see additional Symbian 3 handsets. In fact, I'll be willing to say I'm certain we will see some. We'll leave it there before going into detail, but you can check the site. We'll have plenty of details on all of those. And Nokia is going to be playing up some of the new features, Symbian 3, you know, the refined UI, but also the performance. We'll be hearing more about how the Ovi services work on the handsets and some of the new features, you know, the video editing, the social integration, new versions of maps and messaging for the N8. So I think, you know, they're going to be giving a really big, big PR push to that. And I think it'll be interesting to see what the reaction is, because, you know, Symbian 3 has attracted some scepticism, but there seems to be a lot of positive momentum around it. You know, we're seeing some of the analysts in the States, but also the operators in the UK, all of them arranged it, suggesting the N8 is getting quite a bit of impetus behind it. And I think Nokia World will only add to that. So it should be a very good view, very good show from a Symbian point of view, I believe.
Yeah, just a brief shout out for a big blogger meetup. I think we mentioned it briefly last week. Did the Monday afternoon and early evening before the show, organised by One World. So if you go to the One World site, there's a link on the front page of the All About Symbian site, which has been newly redesigned. Maybe a bit about that before we finish today. Then One World, then you'll see their blogger meetup. And if you're anything to do with social media and the Symbian ecosystem, and then not being a Nokia fan, anything like that, then do drop them a line. I'm sure there's room for more people. And it looks like being a huge, huge meetup. There's something like 70 or 80 of the most prominent Symbian and Nokia bloggers and enthusiasts all getting together in one room, including Rafe, David and Ewan, who will be there on the Monday afternoon as well. So do
will
get
we? Them. Okay. No, yes, I'll be there.
Yes, you will be there.
You will be there.
And we hear you'll be there by video, Steve.
Yes, well, the plan is I'm going to video in along with some other people who couldn't make it on the Monday afternoon from the other side of the world. There are people coming in via Skype from Australia and New Zealand as well. Some of the Nokia bloggers from over there.
And Reading!
And Reading.
Exotic locations all.
Yes, indeed. Fun. Now, I'm moving on. The Nokia N8 has been announced basically for pre-order virtually everywhere now. I think we know prices in most countries. On Nokia's UK web store, it's priced at £429, which is kind of the upper limit of what we were expecting. David, you've been watching the pre-order prices around the country and around the world. What's the cheapest you've seen it for in the UK? Now, any other comments?
Well, the cheapest I've seen it actually just this morning was on Tesco's Tesco Mobile for £289.97. I beg your pardon. But there's no mention of a tariff, and they do say they're currently out of stock, which was no surprise. So I would like to know what the details are of that. So we'll be keeping an eye on Tesco's as things go along.
I think that'll be their standard Tesco Mobile pay as you go deal, and normally you'd expect about £50 or £60 subsidy for a pay as you go thing. So they're relying on your long term custom, but that's a whopping pay as you go subsidy if that price is right.
That's right, Steve. This is going to be on Tesco's pay-as-you-go. So the important thing to bear in mind here is that it will be locked to Tesco's mobile. And so they're able to offer a sort of significant subsidy because they believe, you know, this is going to get people using their network quite a bit. But as you say, you know, this is, I think, the cheapest SIM-free price I've seen for the UK market is about £399. So this is a £110 subsidy. At 25%, that's definitely at the upper end. Although, to be fair, Tesco did offer a similar thing for the 6650 slide. No, sorry, the 6700 slide. And I wouldn't be at all surprised to see a sort of pay-as-you-go market established quite quickly on the other networks around the 350 price mark. And Tesco's does tend to undercut that. So, yeah, no, pretty amazing deal, especially when you compare it to some of the other prices for pay-as-you-go for other premium handsets.
Yeah, I've been looking around the web as well, and I have been surprised by how high the SIM-free prices are. I mean, for example, Play.com have currently got it for £419.99, which seems to be the going rate. And I was kind of disappointed by this because it did seem to be that the new generation of Nokia phones like the C6, E5, N8 were all going to be a lot lower price, and that was going to be one of Nokia's moves in the market to basically undercut the competitors. But the release prices, it was the same with the C6, the release prices do seem very high, so but hopefully they'll come down quickly. But yeah, Tesco does sound like the best deal so far.
Yeah, and you're right, because the C6 started off very expensive. I think the Nokia UK webshop in particular has high prices. That's now dropped to, I think, a much more reasonable level. I think it was £250 the last time I saw it, on various deals. It is worth pointing out for people asking about these, you know, pricing points, is one of the reasons you get this, particularly in the UK, is currency hedging. And this is because exchange rates change over time, and naturally companies tend to do what favours them or take the sort of the safe option. Of course, also with handsets, it's, you know, demand and supply, so that the market will bear what consumers are willing to pay. And so for a company like Nokia, the trick is to set the price such that you sell out of devices as fast as you can make them, but not much more than that, and thereby you optimize and maximize your profit margins. I think what is true with Nokia is we see, it's quite different to some of the other high-end handsets, is you see changes in the price over the life cycle of the product. And so that can drop by as much as 50%, I think, in the biggest case. It's something like the 5800 certainly just about manages that. But I'm sure something like the N8 will drop significantly, probably towards the £300 mark, given enough time.
Let's move on to another item of hardware, the Nokia E5. You probably saw the full and detailed review up on All About Symbian about a week ago as you listened to this. Overall, I mean, I'm sending the handset on to David and Rafe, maybe Ewan as well, if they can all have a good look at it. Overall, it's best described as a big upgrade to the E63. Now, screen technology aside, I know one of my big bugbears was the screen visibility outdoors in sunlight, and the E5 fails miserably there. But screen aside, looking at its price and positioning, it's basically a big upgrade to the E63, and can, the overall specification level is very close in places, and even exceeds in one point in terms of RAM the E72, which is kind of their premium device in this space. And the E5's appearance only really makes sense to me, Rafe, and maybe you've got a comment on this. If the E63 is to the E5, what the E72 is to something else we haven't yet seen. Does this make sense? Is there a mystery device about to be announced that will be at the natural upgrade for the E72?
I would have thought that's a very reasonable assumption to make. What you can say about pretty much every single Nokia device is that there is always an upgrade between 12 and 24 months away. Now, yeah. If you look at the various model numbers involved, there are an E6 and an E7 potentially in the lineup. And so we may see some of those sooner rather than later. But I would certainly expect Nokia to come up with a new sort of premium device in that kind of slab QWERTY form factor. And I think, you know, for a while we'll see the E72 and E5 on the market at the same time. And there are some advantages for the E72, particularly in the materials department. But yes, I would expect to see, you know, that balance sort of redressed a little bit. More than that, it's, you know, probably not fair to speculate any further. Yeah. I would also add that, you know, the pricing it is quite different at the moment. The E5 maybe not so much, but, you know, that will change over time. it is, I think, been interesting to see the E5 coming quite competitively to the UK market. I was, you know, flicking through the paper today and noticed that it's featuring in several adverts, notably in Carphone Warehouse, who are offering it for £15 a month, you know, the handset being free, obviously, on a £15 a month contract with unlimited data, unlimited SMS, and 600-700 calling minutes, which is a pretty attractive deal as far as phones like that go. And, you know, Orange are using it in their HD voice service, which David talked about last week. But yes, to answer your original question, certainly I would expect a replacement for the E72 before too long, maybe, say, sometime in the next 6 months.
Yeah, because the E5, as it stands, is not really something that is hugely attractive to the majority of All About Symbian listeners, certainly not to this podcast, who I suspect are the real enthusiasts. But it's certainly an interesting device in terms of positioning, and yes, maybe its successor, the successor to the E72, will be the one that really gets people going.
Absolutely, and bear in mind the E72 has really only been out, it's been out for less than a year, and it does tend to be, with these type of devices, Nokia, with the E-series, they tend to have a slightly longer shelf life, and it tends to, you know, anything up to 24 months, sometimes to 18 months, and they tend to announce, you know, the middle one and then the high one, and then back to the middle one and the high one again. So it's a pretty fair assumption that, you know, something that might be seen as a replacement for the E72 will be on the way next in that QWERTY slab form factor.
Yeah. Moving on, staying with hardware though, ARM, as we record this podcast, have just introduced their latest processor chip for smartphones, the Cortex A15. David, you've got the story.
Yes, if you read about the specifications of this, it sounds as if they're talking about a desktop processor, but they're not. Some basic numbers on the processor. It's going to be they're going to have single to quad cores, 32 nanometer to 28 nanometer architecture, and the clock speed's going up to a ridiculous 2.5 gigahertz. And as I say, these are supposed to be coming to smartphones, which is just staggering. Yes, I'm speechless. And it even says it will support memory up to 1 terabyte. And I'm not sure when we're going to get phones supporting 1 terabyte of RAM. And the other thing that just kind of gets my goat with it somewhat is just the energy considerations, because there's been a lot of talk lately in the tech world about phones and batteries, and I think there's a certain school of thought that I think batteries aren't really a trendy spec to be quoting to people, where there's other people that are like making the case that mobile operating systems like Android aren't really optimized at all, so they're not energy efficient. And then you have like processors like this, which I would argue we don't really need, and we don't need this much power yet. I think better software optimization is the way to go.
I think it's worth pointing out here, David, I mean, you're right in the sense we don't need it at the current moment in time, but this is just the announcement of the architecture, also the ARM original idea, if you like. It then gets licensed by the likes of STMicroelectronics, Qualcomm and Texas Instruments, who then take it forward and put it into actual silicon. And so it's going to be, I think, 2012, 2013 before we see these in actual phones. And so if you look forward 2 or 3 years, we may need that kind of power. And it's also worth pointing out, you know, it won't necessarily be multi-core. There'll be a chance to have single core in this, and they won't be at the full frequency or the full, you know, 2 gigahertz at the beginning. And in the same way that the current generation of Cortex A8 processors can actually go quite high and, you know, have various elements to them that aren't used at the moment, it's just the same for this. What's interesting here is ARM have actually done a lot of work on the power management, and so they're saying that the power management isn't significantly greater than what we're using today. It's certainly not proportionally if you look at the power involved. And you commented that we don't need it in mobile phones. Well, the thing is, ARM is looking to compete with Intel, particularly the Atom processor that's used so widely in netbooks, and we're looking to be quite popular in tablets as well. So I think, you know, there's, you know, just as tablets represent a race to the middle between mobile phones and desktop computers, so the same thing is happening in chipset architectures, where ARM dominates mobile phones and Intel dominates the desktop, and they're both looking to get into the in-between space. And that's what this is about for, as I say, a few years' time. And the multi-core stuff is, of course, very important, because that's also really about power management. The idea is that you only switch on a core when you actually need the extra processing power. So in basic operations, you'll just have a single core running. And if you're doing something like encoding in HD video, you have multiple cores running. And that's obviously a more power efficient than having one core that you fire up to do everything all the time. Symbian's actually one of the most advanced platforms into supporting these multi-cores. And we're going to see multi-core Symbian devices, I think, probably in the next 12 months, maybe a little longer than that, probably on the Symbian 4 platform, I would imagine, possibly moving on to Symbian 5 or 6 in terms of actually taking full advantage of them, thinking about it out loud. Sorry, it's a technical subject area. But so Armor, at this point when they're announcing it, you know, it's actually quite a long way ahead. I mean, if you look at the same thing happened in 2003 for the Cortex A8 chipsets, which really only started being using in early 2009, 2008. So there can be, you know, a five-year gap. In this case, it's going to be slightly less, I think. But I think it's really exciting to see this happen because, you know, the potential of what you can do with these devices is going to be incredible. And it is just a move towards the mobile phone becoming an ever more powerful computing device. So I saw this and sort of go, it's a while away, but this is the next generation. And we talk about the current generation chipsets that Symbian is only just moving on to at the moment, the i1910 with the first of those. But this is the generation on from that. And as I said, it does tend to go in a 4 to 5 year cycle. And interesting. Watch this space. And we'll try and have more on this in due course.
Now, OviMaps Challenge is something that Rafe has popped into the chat stream here. I have no idea, Rafe, what this is about. Please do tell.
So this is a new game that's a first-party title from Nokian that they're doing the publishing. It's available on Ovi Store, and it's actually developed by Rovio, who is the same company that do Angry Birds. And as you might suspect, that does mean that it's quite a well-put-together game. And this is kind of geography quiz on your mobile phone. You have to work out which maps represent which country, what the capital cities are, what the outline shapes of countries are, and it asks you to do matching of pairs and locating cities on a map and things like that. And it's sort of, you know, quite an educational game in that respect. And it's sort of the sort of game that would have traditionally been an Engage title in the past, and it's slickly put together. You know, it's quite large inside. I think it comes in at about 5 megabytes. It has that kind of usual collecting progress as you go along. You get stamps in your passport as you unlock and visit more countries, but it's a really nicely put together game. It's for S65th edition, and obviously Nokia using it as a sort of brand tie-in to promote Ovi and the Ovi Maps experience. It's going to be demoed at Nokia World. There's going to be a lot more detail on it then. I suspect they'll be running some competitions around it as well, but it's just a good example of how you can create a game that isn't, you know, all fancy graphics. It's really about the gameplay and sort of a fun experience. I found it surprisingly addictive for what is essentially an educational game. You know, you want to get as many points as you can. You want to unlock the extra countries. And it was just very slickly put together, you know, very responsive in terms of screen taps. You know, it just felt nicely designed with attractive on-screen graphics without being one of these, you know, whizzy 3D games. And I wanted to mention it here because I think it's a great example of a game that people might otherwise ignore, but I certainly recommend taking a look at this, downloading it onto your phone. It's available free in the Ovi store, and it's definitely a recommended download from me.
Yeah. As people will know, we've got our sister site, ovigaming.com, which we set up about a year or so ago when Engage version 2, if you like, was in its heyday. Since then, Engage is kind of being folded back into the Ovi store, as you know. But Ovi Gaming is still going strong. We're still putting up game reviews from the Ovi store itself. Ray, do you want to comment on just what will happen to ovigaming.com in the sort of medium term? And maybe you can use that as a launch pad to describe what's new and all about Symbian itself.
Yes, we're sort of considering the future of Ovi Gaming because clearly Nokia's gaming past hasn't been too brilliant recently with the failure of Engage. But we're going to probably start reintegrating a lot of the gaming content back into the All About Symbian site. But we're still making a final decision on that. But if anyone's got any particular comments on that, we'd be delighted to hear them. But Steve mentioned the All About Symbian design refresh. And this is something that went live on sort of late Wednesday evening, Thursday's recording this, so it'll be a few days old. So hopefully a lot of you will have now seen it. Really, the major thinking behind this was to clean up and make the site feel fresher, a bit cleaner, improve the navigation, but also improve the resolution support. It's now on more of a fixed stroke fluid layout rather than being entirely fluid. And so it should have better support for both lower resolutions and high resolutions in browser windows. That also means it works better in mobile devices. You do, of course, have to do scrolling. And we're quite well aware that a mobile site needs an update, and that's also in the works. Some of the other features of the refresh include better commenting system. We've now switched over to Discuss, so you can leave comments on the podcast much more easily and on all the other bits of content on the All About Symbian site. Equally well, we have sort of better social integration, so you can, if you like this podcast, you can click on the like button and that will like it on Facebook, and again that applies to all the different bits of content, or tweet it out or whatever it is you want to do. It is of course new, so if you come across any problems, do let us know. We have done as extensive browsing testing as possible, but there are always some combinations out there that it's not possible to get, so let us know if you have any problems. The one other thing that people should be aware of is that we're now, rather than having sort of intermediate pages for things like reviews and features, which we used to do, we used to post a news item saying we've just released this review or we've just released this feature, we've actually now got these showing up directly on the homepage, so there'll be no sort of interstitial pages, if you like, for news. That just means there are a few less clicks to navigate around the site and will hopefully make it easier for everyone to find the content more easily. I'd be delighted to hear any feedback you have. You can email me directly on rafe@allaboutsymbian.com, send feedback via the comment form on the site, or indeed one of the comment threads, or via Twitter at AAS.
Yeah, and I think full credit to you, Rafe, for some of the hours you put in doing the complete site revamp. People would not believe how late you've been staying up into the early hours of the morning, day after day, doing this coding. So well done. Now, one final piece. Up on the site a couple of days ago, as you listened to this, I put an article called Five Apps on My Smartphone and I'm Still Rolling Along, which in itself was an update to an article, Three Apps on My Smartphone and I'm Still Rolling Along. The idea being that you may have figures like 100,000 apps in an app store quoted. That's for the Android store. There's the Ovi store, I think, is up to about 20,000 actual applications or content items that can be installed. But at the end of the day, 99.5% of that is either rubbish, novelties, jokes, et cetera. So do read the article, because I just want to bang this point home. It's not all about numbers. And when you see the PR companies saying that, oh, yes, the Apple iPhone app store is at 250,000 and your app store is at 12,000, therefore yours is, whatever it is, 23 times worse, then it's absolute rubbish. All you really need is a handful of really, really good applications. David, you've been reading my piece. Do you want to just pick, just as an example, and to get discussion rolling in, do you want to just choose your top five third-party apps that you'd be lost without?
Sure. I've actually got a few overlaps with yours. The top one, which would be no surprise to anyone, is Gravity. It's just such a rich, featured Twitter application. There's also the Symbian Podcatcher, which is a much nicer user interface than podcasting. And actually, when you're using something like the E72, you have to install that, because there isn't really any other option. Yeah. Keeping on the audio theme, Mobbler. If it's particularly handy if you do pay the subscription to Last.fm, that's great just for getting some different content. Because, all right, sure, I've got my music collection stored on E72, but sometimes I want something different, to have a nice surprise. I mean, a couple of chat-based programs. There's a Skype native client, which is very handy for keeping in touch with you all about Symbian team when I'm not at my computer. And also, there's another application which I've just started trying from Lonely Cat Games, who make the Explore File Manager. It's called Slick. It's a multi-platform chat client. The user interface needs some work, and it's actually been in beta for quite a while, years actually, but it does a job, and it even has Facebook chat, which is quite important to me. So they're my five.
Would you agree, David, that just kind of agreeing with my premise, I'm hoping you will, that if you took, say, your top 10 applications, I mean, you mentioned about 6 or 7 there, but if you took, say, if you're allowed 10 and they say, that's it, David, for the next year, you're not allowed to install any other programs, would those 10 be enough to keep you happy?
Yeah, they would. I mean, I'm not someone who installs more apps than I need, so I always like to have as little as possible on. So with what I've got, it covers the basis of everything I want to do. Because it is also worth bearing in mind that the built-in applications that aren't third-party do an awful lot.
Yeah. Yeah, especially on the E-series devices. I mean, props to the E-series team. They may miss out things like podcasting occasionally, internet radio sometimes, but there are an awful lot of widgets, applications, and services all pre-installed on these E-series devices. I was just blown away on the E5 by just how much they'd managed to pack in. And by the way, that also includes the internet radio and podcasting, which are back. So the E5 software suite is just stellar. And if the hardware was just upgraded up to E72 standard, then we'd have an out-and-out winner, I think.
I wonder if you're going to ask me whether I agree, Steve. Well, the answer is I do actually kind of agree with you in that I think there's a core of essential applications that you add on, and actually I think it's relatively limited on Nokia phones in particular, because so much ships out of the box. You do get something like Ovi Maps, which is a fully featured navigation program and locationing getting increasingly sophisticated. But in terms of third-party applications, there are probably only five or so applications I use on a really regular basis. There are several that sort of are maybe less frequent, things like travel planning applications for the London Underground, which, you know, have specific uses. But I do agree with your core point. However, I'm not sure I'd be happy being just stuck with the 10 same ones, because, you know, I do download a lot of what I refer to as disposable applications to my phones. That's partly games, but it can also be applications as well that may have quite a short time cycle on my phone. And this is partly, of course, because in writing for All About Symbian, inevitably I do end up installing quite a lot of applications that developers send over or that I try from the Ovi store so I can write about the good ones on the site. But as a general point, and I said this in a comment thread to your article, I think there's two types of applications, and this isn't really recognised widely enough. There's the applications that you're clearly referring to here, which are the productivity and the sort of ones that add functionality that you use maybe once or twice a week or more frequently. And there are those which are disposable applications, which do tend to dominate the app stores at the moment. And they're the ones that, to my mind, are effectively the new ringtone. People download them because they want to have something playful on their phone that they might just use a couple of times, or if it's more popular, it might get a bit more use in the case of games, which I think are a slightly different rule to apps. But just try it out a couple of times. And these are it's the 100 fart applications or the funny mirror applications, the camera applications. And the number of applications that add lots of functionality are few and far between. The only thing I'd say about this is I do think there's more of them on Android and Apple at the moment, and there is an application gap that Nokia have to overcome, because it is very much depends on the individual. And I'll try and say this as politely as possible, Steve, but some of the more senior members of the team, and I would sort of probably include myself in that, are less into installing every application as soon as it comes out. But in the younger market, I think applications are much more popular, especially disposable content. So it's does go both ways, and I think we should recognise that applications, although I actually as a point think they're overhyped in terms of their importance at the moment, they are clearly critical going forward to the future. And it's how important depends on which market segment you look at. Moment most important in the high end, but also the actual sort of demographic. So maybe amongst business users, those functional applications are the most important, but among the young teenagers, those disposable apps are more important. So it's not an either or option to me, but I do agree with your core point about if it came to it and I had to choose, yes, I could probably just survive with five or so extra applications on my phone.
It's probably fair just to finish that point that that somebody who would be in the market for, say, an N8, a top-end smartphone, would have a very different outlook on the application market and app stores. Absolutely. Than somebody, say, buying a 5230. I know my daughter, if I look at our iPad, there's something like 20 different talking heads where you say something and it repeats it back with a silly expression, and they were all bought at 59p. And you think, well, what a waste of money, but she really enjoys them. And I guess that's maybe some of the lower-end Nokia touchscreen phones. They're aimed at kind of that teenage market, whereas you or I, you running an E72 or me running an N8, would be a very, very different outlook.
Well, I think perhaps you're a bit pessimistic. I mean, with regard to apps, I sort of do see them as perhaps more important. And I think the N8, that ties into it's the high end of the market where applications are most possible. And that's basically been created by Apple with the iPhone and to a lesser extent Android with the Android marketplace. In one sense, I actually think apps are less important lower down the market, where it's not such a critical thing at this point in time. But you're right, there is perversely to that, there is more popular with younger people, which often there's a time with cheap phones there, but not exclusively. I think a lot of the iPhone and the Android users are sort of 30 and under, and then those are older, often have come off enterprise smartphones. Giving ghastly generalisations there, but hopefully you all the listeners get the point. But it's quite clear from this conversation that there is no standard, but there is this recognition of the different types of applications, and of which some are the essential, which are the ones you really couldn't do without.
But that's all we've got time for on this All About Symbian Insight. We will see you at Nokia World if you happen to be there too. Otherwise, we will report back in detail. But it's goodbye from me, Steve Litchfield.
Goodbye from me, Rafe Blanford.
Goodbye from me, temporarily promoted Ewan Spence.
And goodbye from me, David Gilson.
See you next time, guys.